You're listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. The views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au. Morning, everyone. Everyone's welcome. Moving meditation here, 2 p.m. tomorrow. Bush care on Wednesday morning, 9 o'clock. Jenny Warner's here if any questions. An Oxfam event of interest, Understanding the Voice, a virtual gathering, so I presume that's online, Wednesday, 9th of August, 6:30 p.m. I suppose if you look up Oxfam or Understanding the Voice online, you'll find out more detail. Terra Singers are back. I happened to walk into the group last Thursday, nearly added a bass line to the chorus, but it was quite a sizable group. Great to see. They're back on regularly Thursdays, 4 p.m. And I think that's just about all for now. Oh, and also Committee of Management next week. The Vision Committee meeting Monday evening. Very good. The Harndorf Animal Shelter looking for volunteers. If you think you might know someone who could help there, speak to Grant or Bron. Very good. I note that we meet on the traditional lands of the Kaurna people. And we respect their elders past and present. People know they can make contributions in the foyer after the service if they wish, but most importantly, you're here. And so I come to light the chalice, a regular part of our service. We gather around this flame. And today I'm reminded of the words of Carl Jung. The sole purpose of existence is to kindle a light of meaning in the darkness of mere being. And now I'd like to invite Joe up to offer a poem to us. I have put the words up there as well.
Thanks for having me. I visit infrequently, but always with the light. I found it a complex poem to get my head around, but a very, very interesting one. It's entitled Poetry and Religion by Les Murray, an Australian poet who died in 2019. Religions are poems. They concert our daylight and dreaming mind, our emotions, instincts, breath, and native gesture into the only whole thinking. Poetry. Nothing said till it's dreamed out in words, and nothing's true that figures in words only. A poem, compared with an arrayed religion, may be like a soldier's one short marriage night to die and live by. But that is a small religion. Full religion is the large poem in loving repetition. Like any poem, it must be inexhaustible and complete, with turns where we ask, now, why did the poet do that? You can't pray a lie, said Huckleberry Finn, but you can't poet either. It is the same mirror, mobile, glancing, and we call it poetry. Fixed centrally, we call it religion. And God is the poetry caught in any religion. Caught, not imprisoned. Caught as in a mirror that he attracted. Being in the world as poetry is the poem. A law against its closure. There'll always be religion around while there is poetry or lack of it. Both are given and intermittent. As the action of those birds, crested pigeon, Rosella parrot, who fly with wings shut, then beating, and again shut.
Beautifully read. Thank you, Joe. You gave us the space to follow the twists and turns of the poet's thinking as you went along. And now to candles of joys and concerns. Finally, a candle for those joys and concerns which we're not ready to share today, but nonetheless a part of our lives. Let's just take a moment to reflect on what we've heard. Our life is full of joys and concerns. Of course, health is such a priority for all of us. We can so easily take it for granted when we're well, and it can be so debilitating, so troublesome when we don't have good health. We take care of ourselves, we take care of each other. And whether it's in our visits to our brothers and sisters, telephone calls, or looking after ourselves, we stay together as a community and look after each other. And now Grant will come up and offer a reading. Thank you, Grant.
This reading is from The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. There can be no doubt that, as a matter of fact, a religious life, exclusively pursued, does tend to make the person exceptional and eccentric. I speak not now of your ordinary religious believer, who follows the conventional observances of his country, whether it be Buddhist, Christian, or Mohammedan. His religion has been made for him, communicated to him by tradition, determined to fixed forms by imitation, and retained by habit. It would profit us little to study this second-hand religious life. We must make search, rather, for the original experiences which were the pattern setters to all this mass of suggested feeling and imitated conduct.
Well, today it is an ambitious project, but I'll give you a brief history of the world's religions. And because of the nature of the topic, we're going to have two breaks along the way. So we'll get to a point where I'll invite you to stand for a hymn, and then Brendan will also play some more music later on. So for a very long time, probably for over 100,000 years, human beings have been asking questions about the mortal circumstances in which they find themselves. And I wonder if you have asked these very same questions at some stage in your life. The questions arise from a few basic observations. The ego of each of those primitive individuals from long ago, as hell-bent on self-preservation and the pursuit of pleasure and avoidance of pain, as much as egos are today, would have noticed that there were some rather unpleasant aspects of their existence. For a start, there were natural disasters. They might set up camp only to have it burnt out by fire or washed out by flood. The sources of food vanish, sources of water dry up. Why was this unpleasantness visited upon them? And then there was the question of other human beings, who could be rather nasty at times. A neighbouring tribe invades, kills half the men, kidnaps half the women. It is an offence to the ego to think that nothing can be done in the face of the strong brutalising and oppressing the weak. The question must be asked, is there some less than obvious manner in which the weak may be saved from brutality and the strong may be punished for their nastiness? And I put up a slide here, the man asking Jesus, so why do you allow things like famine, war, suffering, disease, crime, homelessness, despair, etc. to exist in our world? And Jesus responds, interesting that you should bring that up, as I was about to ask you the exact same question. Our primitive ancestors also observed that people they loved and cared about would eventually stop breathing, grow cold, and on the obvious level, they would cease to exist. Why this distressing end to life? Or was it the end, since this physical death clearly confounded the ego's foremost goal of self-preservation? Perhaps there was an ongoing existence for the ego and some kind of subsequent existence. Related to these troubling questions was a kind of foundational question. What was the point of it all? Was there some plan or purpose which could make sense of these distressing observations? The question, why are we here, was also tied up with the question, how did we get here? Whether there is a beneficial plan or not, somebody had to set this up, didn't they? And if so, how? William James, in his magisterial work, The Varieties of Religious Experience, published in 1902, from which Grant just read, drew a picture of human existence in a soberly realistic fashion. Quote, humankind is in a position similar to that of a set of people living on a frozen lake, surrounded by cliffs over which there is no escape, yet knowing that little by little the ice is melting, and the inevitable day drawing near when the last film of it will disappear, and to be drowned ignominiously will be the human creature's portion. The merrier the skating, the warmer and more sparkling the sun by day, and the ruddier the bonfires at night, the more poignant the sadness with which one must take in the meaning of the total situation. The answers to these existential questions amount to the history of religion. The purpose of these reflections today, speaking to the evolution and variations in religion since time immemorial, in a ridiculously short space of time, is to give us some perspective on our own individual search for meaning. You can, of course, get a neatly prescribed set of answers to all these questions I've listed. If that is where your curiosity leads you, there are numerous, highly reputable religious institutions which will happily oblige. On the other hand, sitting in the Unitarian Meeting House today, you are entirely free to work out your own responses to these questions. At least here, we can search in good company with fellow travellers, sensitive to our joys and concerns and evolving ideas. As usual, I'm going to be very species-centric. It is worth noting in passing, however, that some of the more developed primates, that is, apart from Homo sapiens, display something like religious behaviour. There are examples of apes that will use particular trees to store up stones inside the trunk. They will perform a leaf-flipping ritual before approaching the tree, and if not depositing a stone, may take a stone from the tree and throw it at the tree. None of these actions seem to have any functional benefit for food gathering or physical preservation. The apes have not been able to tell us why they are doing this. Well, not yet. Perhaps two of the most remarkable aspects of primitive religion are, one, how far it goes back, and two, the commonalities seen in continents far apart from each other. There is archaeological evidence dating back to about 130,000 years before the Common Era, BCE, of corpses being buried with tools and favourite objects. The inference is that these objects would be needed in the life beyond the grave. Archaeologists in the 1930s unearthed a mother and child buried in Palestine. When they were buried about 100,000 years BCE, their bodies were covered in red ochre. at Lake Mungo in Australia. A body buried about 40,000 years BCE was unearthed in 1969, covered in red ochre. The same reverence for the dead in the same manner in two very different parts of the world. Animism was the prevalent form of primitive religion. Before a conception of gods external to the mortal realm, the spirits of plants, objects, and the landscape coexisted with the people and therefore warranted respect. Some ancient rites remain. For example, the procession of men dressed with horns of animals through the streets of Sardinia and southern Italy, continuing today. And always there were stories, stories which didn't just give glib answers to life questions, but explained them. They explained the geography of the known world, the relationships of people to each other, and relationship to other beings and the landscape. More than that, the stories of the Kaurna people and the many other Aboriginal people around the world invariably conveyed an ethical message as well. Our sacred stories can set the markers for greater understanding and good behaviour. Thank you, Brendan. Now, I have put up a wonderful diagram by Simon E. Davies charting the development of the world's religions. Hard to read from a distance, but it maps out the different continents, and going upwards through the chart, it develops chronologically, and we can see the changes that take place over time. I should say at the outset that I'm going to bring a cultural bias to this. I'm only going to speak of the European and Asian continents. I shall have quite enough to talk about. So around 3,000 or 4,000 years ago, we see the rise of polytheistic religions, although there were still plenty of animist beliefs around the globe. And perhaps polytheism was associated with the complications of a settled agricultural life compared to the nomadic hunter-gatherer lifestyle. Provision of water and timing of crops became important. Perhaps it was the human urge to control the environment that projected human personalities to the gods of the sun, the stars, and the earth. And these religions developed in diverse places, in different forms, in Egypt, in Mesopotamia, and in South and Central Asia. Whether it be the pantheon of Egyptian gods or the diversity of Hindu gods, the notion of sacrifice and appeasement was often involved. If the community would behave ethically and literally give up something of value to the gods, it was hoped that the gods would favour the community with harvests and protection. There seems to have been a leap in human consciousness about 2,500 years ago, more or less. The time of Pythagoras in the Mediterranean, the Buddha in India, and Lao Tse in China. It was also around this time that the Jewish religious elite was transported en masse to captivity in Babylon. This period saw the rise of substantial cities and greater specialization of roles in society. Perhaps people didn't have time for philosophy before then. It has been called the Axial Age, first by German philosopher Karl Jaspers, and subsequently by various writers, including Karen Armstrong, who wrote an interesting book called The Great Transformation. The distinguishing religious development in this period was the rise of monotheism. God was conceived as more removed from humanity. Pythagoras wrote of the One. Yahweh was confirmed as the single Jewish God at the same time. Meanwhile, the Buddha in India and Lao Tse in China conceived philosophies in which there was no need for a concept of God at all. The problem of an apparent lack of justice in this world was answered in different ways. The Jewish and subsequently Christian and Islamic religions echoed the Zoroastrian idea of a judgment day at the end of time, when all would get their just deserts. In southern Asia, it was different, where the notion of karma, or in other words, the lessons of repeated suffering, finally led one to a state of enlightenment. Of course, from time to time, innovations occurred among the great religions. Sometimes these occurred for essentially worldly reasons, such as the Anglican departure from the Roman Church, or the split between Sunni and Shia Islam. Often the divergence stemmed from prophetic calls to return to the original message of the faith. Hence, Jainism grows out of Hinduism in purest form. Protestantism reacts to perceived failings in the Roman Catholic Church. Incidentally, one of the many varieties of Protestant reaction to the way the Christian message had been practiced was Unitarianism over 400 years ago. The industrial age in Europe brought with it scientific discoveries which challenged some of the articles of faith. There were no gods in the planets and stars. They were lumps of material stuff hurtling through space according to the laws of physics. The age of the Earth was not 6,000 years, but some hundreds of millions of years. When Darwin's theory of evolution was published in 1859, it was revolutionary. It could not stand with a literal reading of the book of Genesis. In 1882, Friedrich Nietzsche gave us a quip which has become a hallmark of the modern era. God is dead. It rhymes better in German. Gott ist tot. Mind you, God may have had the last laugh because only a few years later she was probably saying, Nietzsche is dead. Ha! With the retreat of religious belief in the Western world, the so-called Western world, Jung found that resolution to the great questions of life could be found by careful analysis of the operations of the mind. If the anxiety caused by uncertainty, loss, or the injustices of life could be completely resolved, one could find peace. Although the Buddha started with a different premise, the Buddhist philosophy does not recognize the personal self, which was central to Jung's perspective. The outcome was the same, and the process somewhat comparable. By living correctly and letting go of the uncertainties, losses, and injustices that stick in the mind, one could attain peace. And now I'll invite Brendan to play some more music. Thank you. Fussing and fighting.
Although this is a Bob Marley song, I'm in a more meditative mood, so I'm play it.
Thank you, that was lovely. So, this survey of the world's religions now brings us pretty well to the present day. An opinion poll was conducted recently in the United States. One of the questions was whether the person believed in, quote, God, angels, heaven, hell, the devil, unquote. 51% believed in at least some of the above. Only 31% believed in the whole lot. You might think those figures are quite high, but in fact they're part of a downward trend, not only in the US, but throughout the wealthiest and most industrialized countries. Of the various religious notions mentioned in the survey question, the poor old devil was the least believed in. So even after inventing television, the internet, and lately social media to distract us from matters of the spirit, so many people have simply stopped believing in the devil. But then again, perhaps that's exactly what he wants us to think. Now, it may well be that the decline in religious belief in our nation and similar nations is not as drastic as the opinion polls might suggest. It could well be that we are past the tipping point where being irreligious is socially acceptable and, in fact, quite normal. So when people are asked about such things, there is perhaps less pressure felt to give a socially conforming answer. There is evidence for this suggestion in Australia's last census. Some 44% of respondents said they were Christian, yet the number who attend church is less than 7%. The psychiatrist Dr. Freud cynically wrote about religion that it was, quote, born from one's need to make helplessness tolerable. Indeed, it is possible with the modern scientific outlook on life to be dismissive of the sacred stories of others, past and present. We can be so proud of our rationality. The practice and institutions of religion have had their flaws, but one might ask whether the loss of religion has led to an improvement in ethical behaviour. Has humanism enough strength and persuasion to encourage a widespread ethos of tolerance and respect for others? Religion has served a valuable role in the development of human societies. Partly because of our advanced capacity to communicate relative to other species, by means of writing and symbols in particular, humans have been able to develop culture across vast populations, and culture can be fairly rapidly adapted to changing circumstances much more quickly than genetic adaptation. And this has given the human species, I suggest, a substantial advantage over other animals. Religion has served as a unifying carrier of culture in ages past. Joseph Campbell, the American anthropologist, wrote in his 1975 book, The Mythic Image, quote, "This cultural inheritance can, on evolutionary grounds, be regarded as adaptive and treated with respect. Note that when an evolutionary biologist encounters some ludicrous and puzzling form of animal life, they approach it with a kind of awe, certain that behind the bizarre form lies a functional wisdom yet to be understood. I believe the case for socio-cultural evolution is strong enough so that psychologists and other social scientists, when considering an apparently bizarre, incomprehensible feature of their own social tradition or that of another culture, should approach it with a similar awe, expecting that when eventually understood, when our theories have caught up with it, that seemingly bizarre superstition will turn out to make an adaptive sense. I find such an attitude totally missing in psychology and psychiatry today." Unquote. Appreciating the religious viewpoints of others doesn't mean that we must believe propositions which we cannot accept as hard fact. As Joseph Campbell said, quote, "All religions are true, but none are literal." Unquote. So I'm unashamedly suggesting to you that there is immense value in the world's sacred stories for our psychic health. One of the defining characteristics of Unitarians is a reluctance to judge others. All are welcome here. Let us be humble enough, no matter how smart we are, to truly accept others, no matter what their religious experience, no matter where they are on their journey through life. Let us truly respect others within our group and those who are not in our group, with open hearts and open minds. I suppose the message ultimately from today is to accept that we're all at different stages on the journey of understanding, of becoming really full of wisdom and love, and to accept others where they are in their own journey. We hope you've enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter. This permission can be obtained by emailing admin@unitarianSA.org.au. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians or by visiting our website at unitarianSA.org.au.